What's the most sustainable way to love fashion? It's changing the way you shop by shopping with The RealReal. The RealReal is the world's largest and most trusted source for authenticated luxury resale. When you shop with The RealReal, you'll find the luxury brands you love, like Prada, Celine, and Loewe, all for up to 90% off retail. And when you're ready to refresh your wardrobe, you can sell the pieces you no longer wear to fund your next new to you finds. Buy, sell, repeat. Guilt-free. The RealReal extends the life cycle of luxury by keeping coveted items in rotation. Sell to shop, shop to sell with The RealReal. It's better for the planet and better for your closet. Plus, during Earth Month, you can earn $100 extra when you sell with The RealReal. Go to TheRealReal.com to get started. Earn $100 extra during the entire month of April at TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com. Terms apply.
Everyone, I'm Sam.
And I'm Sean.
And this is Key to the Case. Welcome back. Thank you all for tuning in this week. I have to say, several of you reached out to us through social media with really encouraging messages, letting us know you're still listening and want us to keep going. So if you took the time to do that, just know we greatly appreciate it. It's a nice little boost of encouragement, really. I do just want to add that we heard about the update in the Lisa McBride case that we covered just a couple episodes ago. There has been an arrest in that case. We are aware. So we are working on an update episode for that. We just wanted to record and get this one out first. Today, I have a very bizarre unsolved murder to share with a victim who had a tie to a famous basketball player. Now, that detail doesn't relate to her case, but it will come up. All right, let's dive in. Erica Weems was 37 years old at the time of her murder in 2020. Erica was raised within a tight-knit family in West Akron, Ohio. Erica was the middle child between her younger brother, Brandon, and older sister, Shermaine. Erica's mom, Brenda, was an accomplished professional with decades of experience as a nurse, and her dad worked at a factory in the area. This was a busy household. The kids were involved in sports, especially basketball, but Erica was a cheerleader as well. And academics were important too. So between extracurricular activities, sports, and maintaining grades, there was rarely a dull moment in the Weems home. Erica's personality always brought a lot of life and energy. Those closest to Erica characterized her as fun, outgoing, and smart. She also had this very caring and nurturing side to her, which was evident in more ways than one. Shermaine told NBC that when they were younger, she and Erica would butt heads sometimes, but as they got older, they developed a very solid friendship. They were well connected with each other. And at the time of Erica's murder, they were talking to each other upwards of 10 times per day. Now, I did not know this going into this case. You probably did. But professional basketball player LeBron James is from Akron, Ohio, and he happened to be from sort of around the area where Erica and her siblings grew up. And it just so happens that LeBron and Erica's brother, Brandon, played basketball and other sports together as kids and into their teen years. LeBron grew close with not just Brandon, but the whole Weems family to the point where they were god siblings and Erica's parents were LeBron's godparents. LeBron considered their mom, Brenda, to be like a second mom. Brandon went on to have a career in basketball too. So at the time of Erica's murder, he was the director of scouting for the Cleveland Cavaliers, and now he's the assistant general manager. And when Erica's mom, Brenda, tragically died from cancer far too young at the age of 45 in 2006, LeBron played his first NBA playoff game in honor of Brenda. Brenda's death rocked the family. Erica had a close relationship with her mom, so to lose her mom in her early 20s was not easy. 2006 was the same year that Erica graduated from The Ohio State University with a degree in human development and family sciences. The following year, she earned a master's degree in education from Kent State University. These degrees were a step in the direction of a career working with children. She had always loved kids, working with kids, and knew that's what she wanted to do. Erica moved away from Akron to Columbus, Ohio. These two cities are about a two-hour drive from each other. Erica began her career in childcare, and in 2012, 8 years before her murder, she opened a daycare facility in Columbus. This was a huge accomplishment for Erica, who, again, enjoyed caring for so many children over the years. And then the pandemic happened. So fast forward to spring 2020, as COVID began to spread in the U.S., Erica had to shut down her daycare and she never reopened it. But this presented a fresh start for Erica, and her friends said she was actually relieved. She decided to move back to Akron to be closer to her family and start a new chapter. I kind of wondered if this was a situation where she had been wanting to move back, but felt the pressure of, you know, taking care of people's children and knowing that if she shut down her daycare, that puts people in a difficult spot. So maybe the pandemic ended up forcing her hand there. Either way, she was happy to move back to Akron and get involved in the community again. She loved to volunteer in various capacities. She was even a founding member of a local nonprofit called Young Black Professionals Coalition, which helped many young adults and kids by providing scholarships and mentorship programs. Erica settled into a home in West Akron and began running a daycare from her home while she worked on securing a facility to open a physical child care center in Akron. Erica had never been married. She didn't have kids, but she lived this very full, independent life up until her murder. And that brings us to Halloween night in 2020, which was a Saturday. That evening, Erica and her dad watched a college football game together. Penn State was playing at The Ohio State University, so they made plans to watch that game. While they were together, nothing was amiss. There was nothing foreboding, if you will, about the evening. Erica's dad had no idea this would be the last time he saw his daughter alive. At some point that night, Erica received a phone call. And she proceeded to tell her dad that she had a date and was going to head out shortly. Now, according to the Akron Beacon Journal, he asked Erica who she was going to see. But she did not tell him, instead reminding him that she was an adult. And essentially, despite the fact that she had a great relationship with her dad, it wasn't his business. Erica was 37, not 16, right? I think it makes complete sense that she might not fill her dad in on the details of her dating life. But hindsight is 2020. And of course, we now wish she had told her dad who exactly she was going to meet up with. And Erica's dad has said that he regrets not asking more questions. But again, he was respecting his daughter's privacy and had no way of knowing what was to come.
Do we know if this was a first date with this person or was she dating other people? I guess, what was her relationship status like?
The reporting on this is vague, but she was reportedly dating someone at the time of her murder. So it's possible that the person she was going to meet up with was that person she was known to be dating. But I also don't know how serious that situation was. So it could have been someone else. We just don't know. The police probably do, but they haven't said if they know. Erica left her dad around 9 p.m. He asked that she let him know when she got home, but she failed to do so that night. Reportedly, she would typically text her dad when she got back home after seeing him, even though in this case, she was going to see someone else. It sounded like she would still do that when she arrived home. But again, she didn't that night. I don't read too far into that. She could have forgotten, especially since she was heading to meet someone. And I don't think it means she didn't have a chance to send that text. This idea is bolstered by some information Erica's sister Shermaine shared during an interview with a podcast called Live at Studio 225. Shermaine stated that she spoke with Erica on the phone. It sounded like on FaceTime at 1:15 a.m. Shermaine told Erica all about what she did that night for Halloween and asked Erica what she was doing. But Erica said she wasn't doing anything, and Shermaine could see that it was dark in Erica's home. All the lights were turned off, and she might have been watching TV, possibly with someone else there. Now, Shermaine was clear that she doesn't know if someone was with Erica because Erica didn't say anyone was with her and she didn't see someone on the call. So she doesn't know, but she speculated that someone else could have been there. Although she also said that Erica might not have picked up the call if she were with someone. Erica told Shermaine that she was about to go to bed and that was the end of the call. I found it helpful to know that she made it home. So this is why I was saying she probably simply forgot to tell her dad she made it home. Shermaine also suggested that maybe Erica didn't go somewhere between when she was with her dad and then when she was home. Again, she doesn't know that with certainty, but she's definitely questioned that when trying to piece together the timeline. And we have to consider that Shermaine, you know, is in contact with the police about this case, and they may have alluded to that with her. Like they couldn't pinpoint if she went anywhere between leaving her dad and then going home. That phone call with her sister was the last communication Erica had, except for a text, which we'll get into. But otherwise, communication largely cut off from there, which could mean that something happened to her shortly after that, or she went to bed like she said she was going to, and something happened later that day. Erica's dad, as well as other family members and friends, attempted to reach Erica throughout that day. So this was Sunday, November 1st, but calls went directly to voicemail. People figured Erica was busy that day and they would hear from her soon enough, but that was not the case. When Monday rolled around, the red flags were popping up more because Erica was supposed to care for a friend's baby that day and she failed to show up for that. I mean, Erica cared for children for a living. She wasn't just going to skip out on a commitment like that. This friend was also friends with Shermaine. So when the friend couldn't get in touch with Erica, she called Shermaine to let her know what was going on. At that point, Shermaine realized that neither she nor any of Erica's other family members had heard from her the day before. So she and her husband, John, went to Erica's house to check on her that afternoon. Erica did not come to her front door when they arrived, and that door was locked. So they went around back and found the back door unlocked. Alarms were really going off by the time they made that discovery. Shermaine told that podcast that inside there was this bar cart Erica had, and it was tipped over. Otherwise, the main living space didn't look like it was in disarray, but there was an eerie silence filling the home. Erica's home was on the smaller side, so it didn't take them too long to find her. Erica was in her bedroom, slumped on her bed with her feet dangling from the side of the bed. Her body was partially wrapped in a bath towel, and the blood in the room and the lifeless nature of her body told them she was no longer alive. They called the Akron police around 3 p.m., and the police and paramedics arrived only to confirm their worst fears that Erica was dead, and the circumstances made it clear that this was a murder. During the autopsy, the medical examiner concluded that Erica had been shot 3 times with a small caliber firearm. Three News reported that a single bullet fired from intermediate range entered her right temple and caused the fatal injury. So the person was physically pretty close to her when they shot her, but this was not a contact wound. The remaining wounds were described in the report as superficial. Investigators recovered 4 bullet fragments in total, but no firearm or shell casings were found. So the lack of a gun at the scene firmly ruled out a suicide, as well as the 3 shots to her head. The lack of shell casings in Erica's bedroom tells us that the killer either removed the shell casings before they left or used a weapon such as a revolver that would not eject the shell casings. When it comes to the timing of it all, the police believed, since Erica was wrapped in a towel when she was found, she was either about to get in the shower or had just gotten out when she was shot. They really couldn't tell one way or the other, because the other piece of the timeline here is that they estimated Erica had been dead for at least a day when found. So, point being, if this was a shower where she washed her hair would not have still been wet at that point. But that timing also makes sense because of when Erica's communication stopped. She was someone who stayed in close contact with her family and friends. So the lack of responses from her on Sunday, the day before she was found, is just another piece of information that aligns with her estimated time of death.
So the latest she could have died was Sunday afternoon, right?
Yes.
And the earliest could have been right after she got off FaceTime with her sister.
Yeah, I would say that's the last time someone had eyes on her besides her killer. You know, there could have been more communication as far as texting goes after that. But that would be probably the earliest, would be shortly after that call she had with her sister. Something I was not expecting to hear in this case is that when Erica was found, she had an item gripped in each of her hands, one being her cell phone and the other a red Solo cup.
Seems like it'd be hard to hold on to 2 items after you've been shot in the head 3 times.
I know. I assumed the force of the gun being fired at her would cause her to drop those items.
So does that mean this was somewhat staged? But like, what would her holding her phone and her and a red Solo cup even signify?
Right.
What kind of scene are they trying to paint?
What would be the point of staging that? I guess the other possibility is that she didn't die right away when shot and had some sort of consciousness to hold on to these items. Or, like you said, someone put the items in her hands after killing her, but neither of the scenarios seem that probable. I guess, so when I learned about her phone in her hand, there was this additional feeling of unease, knowing she was holding her phone the entire time people were calling and texting her. And then the Solo cup seemed a little random for a number of reasons. But because she was wearing a towel, it seemed like an odd time to be holding that. But for all we know, she may have had company at her home. And after she got out of the shower, she was drinking something from that cup while she talked to this person. To be clear, I don't know if there was any liquid left in the cup or if it had spilled out. All I can say is that if these items weren't staged, I think she was taken by surprise. It seems like if she saw the killer point a gun at her or there was some sort of altercation, those items would have dropped from her hands before she was killed. But I don't know. Are any ideas coming to you as to why someone would have put these in her hands?
I have no idea. I think it's more likely what you were mentioning earlier, that the first shot didn't kill her and, you know, she slumped onto the bed and, you know, was continuing to hold these things prior to the last 2 shots.
Yeah, I think it had to be something like that. Seems too odd to put these specific items in her hands because it feels like it doesn't mean anything. But Maybe our listeners have some ideas. So definitely let us know if there's any theory coming to mind in this case. But I feel more inclined to believe that this was just some weird situation where maybe the thing that you expect to happen, meaning these items would drop from her hands, just didn't happen. The news of Erica's murder was heartbreaking and confusing for her family. NBC reported that, you know, on one hand, it was hard to imagine that this was a random crime. But on the other hand, the thought that someone who knew Erica would want to harm her made no sense. One friend said Erica was so unproblematic that they couldn't think of anyone who would want to kill her. Erica's family worked to spread the word. They wanted people to come forward with information that could solve her murder. This case received even more coverage when LeBron James made a tweet about Erica's murder, encouraging people to give Erica's family answers. There were actually a lot of articles I came across that centered around LeBron James tweeting about Erica's murder. So I think, obviously it's not about him, but I think it brought a lot of additional eyes to her case, which was ultimately good. Shooting Erica seems a little impersonal, but the killer was in Erica's bedroom with her, presumably. I suppose there is a scenario where someone snuck into her house and shot her. To my knowledge, this hasn't been ruled out, but we do know there was no sign of forced entry. I'd been thinking about this scenario where maybe someone was in Erica's home, someone she knew and trusted, and there was a fight between them that turned physical, and then that person shot her. But I didn't read about any defensive wounds or extensive bruising. And I have to say, that scenario is super unsettling, because that would mean then if this was someone Erica trusted, they were hanging out in her home with a gun on them. I don't know. I just feel like in the scenario where this person knew Erica and they were let into her home, they planned to shoot her. How does that sit for you?
I'm definitely leaning more towards that they had predetermined intentions of doing this rather than they get into a fight and this person kills her. That just seems, I guess, more unlikely to me.
And I would think there would be signs of that, more signs of that. If this were an altercation that escalated to murder, you would think the scene would be a little more chaotic than it was. And like maybe she wouldn't be holding those items in her hands. And I still don't think that would be a reason someone would stage her phone and Solo cup in her hand.
You'd think there'd be more of a physical altercation and more disarray in the home, rather than they get into a fight and this person just pulls a gun immediately.
Now, there was that bar cart in her living room that was knocked over, but we don't know when that was knocked over. I was like, maybe they were running out of her home and, you know, bumped against it, depending on how lightweight it was, and tipped it over, because it seems like everything went down up in her bedroom. So the bar cart is just kind of this unknown piece of information here. Something to add is that we know the killer didn't leave empty-handed, because Erica's purse was missing, as well as some other items, but nothing of great value was taken from Erica's home. Erica's family was surprised when they learned the details of one of the last texts sent from her phone. The text was sent to a male friend, which feels like code for the guy she was dating. Sometimes the media will, I think because of what the police say, call someone a friend when it's really someone the victim was romantically involved with, which I think they do to leave it more ambiguous. But the text read, "I opened the back door for a stranger in my towel because I thought it was you, LOL." And that is one of the reasons I think the person she texted was likely not just a friend. If she thought a male friend was at her door, would she open the door in a towel? I don't think so. But first, I want to share Shermaine's perspective on this text. Shermaine thought it was odd that Erica didn't tell her about this encounter. They were so close. They talked all the time. It was certainly something Erica would tell her sister about. So Erica not telling her could be for a few reasons. This stranger could have been the person who killed Erica shortly after she sent that text, leaving her without a chance to tell her sister this. Or Erica did not send this text and this didn't actually happen, which we can come back to. Or Erica didn't feel the need to tell her sister about this strange situation right away and thought she could just tell her the next time they spoke. Further, Charmaine was surprised that a stranger would come to Erica's back door in the first place. And keep in mind, this was during the first, 6 or 7 months of the pandemic. People were kind of keeping their distance and going to someone's back door feels intimate. I should describe the exterior of Erica's home a little bit here. So the driveway was on the side of the house, and it took you straight to the garage, which was in the back of the house. So in theory, if someone pulled up to the end of her driveway, they would be more at the back of the house than the front. But a stranger who's not up to no good probably wouldn't pull that far into someone's driveway. And someone who's there for non-nefarious reasons should not be going to the back door. Charmaine actually thought if there were a stranger at Erica's back door, she would have called her brother-in-law, so Charmaine's husband, or even the police, but none of that happened.
Yeah, they probably went to the back door in an effort to not be seen by as many people, I would assume.
Right, like maybe a neighbor would see someone going to her front door, possibly not her back door, although the houses in this neighborhood are close together, so they were at risk of being seen regardless.
Like if someone had a Ring camera, they would have been pretty well visible going straight to the front door.
That's a good point. A Ring camera is probably not going to pick them up doing something at the back door. It could pick them up walking up her driveway. But unfortunately, in this case, we don't know anything about neighbors' cameras. I don't know if a car, a person, or anything was seen from a neighbor who had something like a Ring doorbell.
Yeah, maybe this person went up to her back door the first time. They left. She had just enough time to send that text. And then they came back, potentially.
I think it's possible because she had time to send that text, if she did send it, which we'll talk about. But she had the time to send that text. Did the person try to get into her home when they went to her door, but it just wasn't quite right? And then they came back?
Unless this was someone she knew and this person tried to put off the scent on themselves by sending that text on her phone and putting her phone in her hand.
Yes.
Maybe? I don't
Definitely
know.
Definitely a possibility. But before we go too far down that path, Charmaine also said that the message felt off compared to Erica's usual texting style. She didn't typically use the laughing out loud abbreviation of LOL, and overall the text just seemed a little out of character for Erica. I'd like to know the exact time this message was sent and if the person she sent it to has been ruled out, because that was presumably someone she was pretty close with. But let's say Erica did send this text. Who in the world was at her door? Is this the key to the case, meaning someone she didn't know killed her? But then how did the person get in? And why did some random person show up to her house and shoot her? For what? Her purse was taken, but there was no activity after the fact on her credit cards or through her bank. It is also possible that this was a separate event and whoever was at her door had nothing to do with this. I just find that hard to believe. I'm sure some people listening are thinking there's no way this was a coincidence, and others maybe can see how it could be. And then, as you already mentioned, the other possibility is that someone sent this text from her phone. If you think about it, it would be smart, and I don't like to use that word in this instance, but it kind of is, because it could lead the police to focus on people not known to Erica as potential suspects. And like you said, kind of throw off the scent. Now, of course, they would look at everyone, but maybe the focus would be that this was a stranger-on-stranger murder, which are notoriously difficult to solve. But who would think to do that? If that's what happened, it's surprising. And I wouldn't think the person she sent this text to would be a great suspect if Erica didn't send the text, because it would be even more surprising if that person had sent the text to themselves. that would kind of do the opposite potentially of throwing off the scent. But it also feels like this person knew enough to know who to send that text to, because it didn't sound like it was odd that she sent it to this person, but it was odd that she didn't mention it to her sister. If Erica truly sent that text, was she expecting that person, the person she sent the text to show up, or did they have a habit of just dropping by?
Wonder if this stranger maybe looked similar to someone she knew. Like, it's kind of strange to just open the back door to someone when you're just in a towel, unless you're expecting someone, or maybe she was able to peek out of a window to see a glimpse of the person and they may have looked similar to someone she knew. So she was like, oh, that's so-and-so, I'll let them in.
Now that's a really interesting point, because if that person actually did look like the person she ended up texting, that would help us with a suspect description. Of course, we'll never know, but I'd been thinking she just opened the door and didn't look out before. But now that I think about that, that does seem really odd, especially the back door, which makes me think she was expecting someone, right? But it is possible that she literally thought it was that person she texted because it looked like that person. As mentioned previously, Erica was dating someone at the time of her murder. And according to the Akron police, he was cooperative and not considered a suspect. Several years prior to her death, Erica was engaged to someone. She broke off the engagement. This man was also cooperative and not considered a suspect. With the two people from Erica's life who might seem like good suspects on the surface, apparently ruled out, who are they left with? I really don't know. The police are keeping most details close to the vest. It seems like even from Erica's family, for the most part, they have felt disappointed in the communication from law enforcement about Erica's case. One of the few statements the police have made was that Erica didn't have any adversarial relationships with anyone.
I think the placement of her body is a little odd. You'd think if it was a stranger, she'd likely be more towards the front door or the back door, not upstairs in her bedroom. You know, unless this person chased her all the way up there somehow, but you'd think she'd just want to try to get out of the house.
Yeah, or I was thinking if this, you know, in the stranger theory, if they snuck in somehow to her home and kind of creeped up the stairs and she didn't even see it coming, I guess that would be the other possibility. Otherwise, that line of thinking makes sense to me, that if this was a stranger, she would have been found maybe more in the main living area of her home, or like you said, near the front or back door. Just her being in her bedroom, like, that just seems more like this was someone who knew her. Charmaine pointed out that Erica lived in a high crime area in Akron, but was always cautious and safe. The Akron Beacon Journal noted that Erica's killing took place during a year when Akron experienced a record number of homicides, most of them shootings, but the police do not believe that Erica's murder was linked to any of the other shootings. This seemed like an isolated incident to them. Now, a detail I came upon that is a little bit random here is that Nancy Grace and her team took an interest in Erica's case and they reached out to her family. And as part of that, they apparently suggested that Erica's killer could have been a woman. At least that was their theory. I don't think we really have enough information to say one way or the other, but I think one of their reasons was the weapon used. It was a small caliber firearm, which they thought aligned more with a woman having carried this out. I'm not opposed to the theory. This man dating Erica, did he have a jealous ex, or could he have been seeing Erica and someone else at the same time and that person found out and wanted to remove Erica from the equation? That could explain where Erica was killed without having any known enemies. But Erica likely wouldn't have let that person into her home. And again, that's what I'm having a hard time getting past. Did they slip through an unlocked door? quietly creep up the steps to her bedroom and catch her off guard? Or was this someone she let into her home, someone she felt very comfortable with, who had an issue with her, some unknown issue? It's frustrating that a case like this that occurred in 2020 has not been solved yet. With all of the advancements in technology and forensics, you would think this case would have a greater chance of being solved than many of the others we've covered. And I go back to that phone call Erica received that prompted her to leave her dad. Has that person been ruled out? Did she actually see that person after leaving her dad? So many questions about that, but again, the police have been tight-lipped. I would also think because she was running a daycare out of her home, all of those parents would have to be looked at. Could a parent have perceived something Erica did as not being in their child's best interest? Sure, it feels a little outlandish because Erica was so good with kids and had years and years of childcare experience. But I still think that would have to be looked into, although I don't know how many families she was even working with yet.
I'm sure you would have mentioned it, but I'm assuming the police weren't able to find any DNA evidence or, I don't know, shoe prints or anything that could lead them to a suspect.
If they did, they haven't said anything about that. They could have DNA that just hasn't been matched to anyone, and maybe they're choosing not to share that, or fingerprints, but yeah, they just haven't said one way or the other. They make it seem like this is a case with almost no evidence, which is really discouraging. Erica's family wanted to honor her in various ways. When Erica was murdered, she was in the process of purchasing the house she was living in. So Shermaine and her family finished that process. Shermaine said it felt like she was doing what Erica would have wanted. Erica's family also started a scholarship fund in her name to benefit students at the high school Erica attended. In 2025, it was reported that about $30,000 in scholarships had been granted to more than 20 seniors at that high school. Unfortunately, Erica's dad has since passed away. He was only 61 and had some health issues that you can imagine were worsened by the stress of losing his daughter in the way he did and not having answers. There is a $15,000 reward available to anyone with information leading to the identification, arrest, and indictment of the person or persons responsible for Erica's murder. This reward includes contributions from the Cleveland Cavaliers and Summit County Crime Stoppers. If you have information, please call the Akron Police Department Detective Bureau at 330-375-2490. You can also call the Summit County Crime Stoppers at 330-434-COPS or text your tip to 274-637. Those with information can remain anonymous. Thank you all so much for tuning in for this case, and we hope you'll be back for the next one. Bye.
Bye.